Hello.
Morning.
Morning. Very nice.
Yes?
I am most happy to come here to speak, Mister.
Yes? We can hear you quite well.
I am Ahmad.
Would you spell your name?
I come here.
Yes?
Yes, one of your helpers comes when you have your little sitting.
Oh, good.
Yes, how very nice.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Yes.
I got an idea he's Egyptian or something like that.
Oh, yes.
It's not my usual command. How very nice in this country.
Yes.
Thank you, Mickey, for doing that thing.
Good morning. I do not know if it is possible that you hear what I say to you.
Yes?
I am very interested indeed in everything that you endeavor to do, because it is for me an opportunity to be of service, and I know many of my friends here are very anxious, as indeed for you, I know, to circulate this knowledge. Hello.
We can hear you.
It is, my name is Rishi.
Your name is Rishi?
Rishi.
Yes?
I was very interested in this subject, you know, before I come to this side of life.
Mm-hmm.
It is very interesting indeed to be able to manifest and to know from this side the mechanism and the methods of control and what is happening. When I was on your side, I have experience with various mediums and many things that were very puzzling, which of course now I begin to realize and understand much more clearly the many difficulties there must be in communication.
Mm-hmm.
You have taken on a very responsible position to express this knowledge to people, but with your modern machinery, if you are able to recapture the voices and everything, silence, everything in as it is originally, it is very important, very wonderful advancement to know that you have this machine, to be able to go here and there, to play, and to give people the identical experience that you have when you are present, such as this, you know. I am here with Flammarion. I am here with my friend Flammarion, and also many other people that you would know. People that, like myself, are very interested in this subject, Janotsin, many other people, such as Doyle, Lodge, my contemporaries, people that were interested in this subject. We are all interested in your work, knowing that you are doing a great good in spreading this great truth, and by the scientific method of recapturing on what you call tape machine. Very interesting. I wish it were so in my day. It would be a great blessing, great help to us.
Excuse me, were you any special kind of medium when you were?
Oh, I was not a medium, madam. I was far from being a medium.
Oh,
but I was tremendously interested in this subject. I study it and I experiment with mediums. You probably have not heard about me, which is good.
Yes, I heard about you. Yes. You lived in France, didn't you?
For my life. You hear me, sir, what I said to you?
Yes.
Just so. I don't know, you see, always, if my voice is
yes,
right.
Yes, you're very fair.
I have realized, of course, now, a thing I didn't understand before, that all communication, our communication, my communication to you, it is the concentration of my thought, which is transmitted to your thought. via the artificial response, which is responsive and react and vibrate in your harmony condition and give to you my thoughts. So the thoughts of any communicating entity transmitting artificially to you.
May I ask you something? When you're giving these tape demonstrations, I give a small lecture beforehand. Am I correct in my description of how you people come through?
Oh, yes, quite. Of course, we must also remember that there are varying methods, that the chief method and the fundamental method is always the transmission of thought into sound artificially. That is what people do not realize in the world. Sometimes they question the intonation or the sound of the voice and say, well, that sounds rather like so-and-so, or rather more so this or that, you know. They must remember that the voice itself must be artificially created. It cannot be naturally reproduced as it would be in your own sphere, with your own physical body. You are not using the same body. You are not using the same vocal organs. You are not, indeed, you are not even communicating under natural conditions. All communication must, to some extent, be unnatural. Although we are naturally anxious to communicate and we are desirous of it, the methods that we have to employ are not, in a sense, natural. They have to be transmitted artificially to you, and therefore the miracle is that you receive anything. These people who come and criticize, they do not understand the fundamental truths of this.
You've had a lot of trouble over them, haven't you?
How do you mean you have had many
trouble? Well, in one case, Boris has criticized quite a lot.
Oh, I see. Well, that is bound to be. It is very unlikely, particularly in the first instance of communication, that a person will be able to recapture identically the voice of the earthly body. I do not think that is feasible. After all, what concerns a particular voice is the physical organism, the body, the construction of the larynx and the vocal organs, the education of the individual or the lack of it. In other words, a voice is something which is built up in your world over a long period. And when we reproduce, we must reproduce artificially. And also it depends on how much we can recapture and remember of ourselves. You know, it is not easy. People do not understand this. They should make more allowances. After all, it is what we say, not so much what our voice may sound like that matters.
Well, when you're speaking now, are you actually just thinking what you're saying into the voice box and it's coming to us as that?
You see, we build the voice box, the scientists, whose task it is, utilizing the interplasm drawn from the medium and also sometimes the sitters that are present, they reproduce from ectoplasm a replica of the vocal organs necessary for speech that is held, as it were, in an auric emanation or an auric condition or on by the medium. Then we have to enter into the medium's vibration and the vibration particularly of the auric voice box. And then we have to transmit by thought, and that is automatically reproducing sound in your vibration.
Is the same sort of principle you impress upon anybody, you impress a thought into their mind, say, to do certain things or to say certain things?
All communication, whether it is in your world or from this world, is mental. It must be. There is not a single thing that you may do that first your mind is not conscious, that does not, as it were, make it possible. You lift a finger, your mind, your thoughts, then your finger to move.
Now, when it takes, in, say for instance, a medium, a trance medium, when the spirit communication takes them over, they actually using their vocal cords, are they?
Oh, yes. There's a difference between trans medium ship and the deep voice.
Yes, I know, but they're actually using their vocal cords.
That is so. Obviously, they must transmit through the medium, and the medium's vocal organs are used. Mm-hmm. The medium becomes, as it were, the subject. In other words, the instrument is really under hypnosis. Mm-hmm. The more deep the entrance, the more hypnotic the power. All mediumship, to some extent, must be under hypnotic influence. In other words, we take control of the instrument. The more we can take control of the instrument, the more successful are our contacts.
Mm-hmm.
The medium who is conscious, the medium who resists, is not invariably such a good instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You see, the medium must be prepared to lose his identity completely. In other words, to give up himself, that he may be taken over.
Mm.
I'm talking of here, of course, of mental mediumship, trans mediumship. There is a vast difference between mental and trance mediumship and direct voice, which, when direct voice is of a high caliber, it is obviously the best, because we can bypass, how you say, avoid the medium completely.
Now, when you're speaking to us now, you can hear us quite plainly.
I am more conscious of your thoughts, Larry, than I am of the sound. I am conscious of the sound. I do not always speak, how you say, I'm not always conscious of exactly what you are saying, but before you enunciate the word, quite often I can pick it.
Okay, so we're working in reverse, as it were. Our sound is connected to your thought.
I think what one must bear in mind is, and it is the most fundamental thing in communication, is that all communication is meta. Whether it is with human beings or the animal kingdom, even birds, whatever the form of life, there is thought. There is the power to send out. It is a form of telepathy, almost.
And can you see us sitting here?
I can, if I concentrate. This is there again. I don't think it is possible for you to understand quite. It depends on the amount of concentration that I put into it. The more highly concentrated the thought of the communicator, the more successful will he be in his communication, whether it is in transmitting a message, or whether it is in actually being present, that is, to be knowledgeable, or to be able to see the people, in this case, who are in the room, and also from the point of view of, for instance, materialization. It all depends on the tremendous thought power of the communicator. The more they are able to concentrate that thought, the more dynamic it is, the more solidified it can become by concentration. Concentration of thought is a big factor in successful communication.
And when you passed over, how did you pass over?
Well, I have some idea of this, of course, which was fortunate. Mm-hmm. But I was very happy because I knew what had happened to me. I was not a stranger to this knowledge. I knew that I had passed over and that I was quite content. I was quite satisfied. In other words, I was not clinging to any particular preconceived idea. That which I had been given had satisfied me of its reality, that there would be a life after death. It would be in many ways a natural existence, which I found it was. I had no sort of religious, strong religious convictions, which would hamper me. I found that everything here was quite normal, quite natural. In many ways, the life which I found myself was very similar to that which I had experienced on Earth. When I say this, what I'm trying to convey is that our world is in many ways like the Earth from the point of view of nature. We have all that you would expect in the way of natural surroundings. We have all the flowers, the birds, everything, all that you would hope for in a new life that would make one happy.
So where did you actually find yourself in your past? How did you find yourself?
Well, it is, when you say, where did I find myself?
Well, did you find yourself in a room?
Oh, I see what you mean. No, I was in what I suppose you would call a beautiful garden, which was not unlike a garden that I had known in my youth. And in I have since discovered, of course, that in a sense it was almost a replica carried over by the mind, the thoughts of my parents. Mm-hmm. You see, they had always loved this garden, and I had been used to it. Mm-hmm. And in consequence, it was quite natural that they should have that surrounding, which they retain. You see, we do not realize what a tremendous effect we have by our thoughts. A man is no more nor less than as he thinks. If he creates certain thoughts which are strong and real to him, they are realities. And he will find that he has created certain conditions under which he will exist and live for a time until he changes his outlook and his thoughts. We are no more or less as we are in thought.
That means to say that if you can imagine a lovely garden in your thoughts, it's a reality you're created and you pass from this side.
Yes, that is so.
A lovely garden in my thoughts.
But we must differentiate here a little, because there is a difference between what you would call imagination and that which you have helped to create by effort. There are certain illusionary conditions here. In other words, a person may be under an illusionary vibration, or condition rather, and in an illusionary vibration, which will pass when the illusion passes, when the mentality changes. The realities here are something quite different. Many people go through phases, changes, according to the outlook and their expectation of things. that realities are quite a different thing. Many of the things here are as real, indeed they are more real than anything in all life. And also you must remember that many of the things here are created not by thought alone. It is true that always the beginning there is the thought, but effort must come into it. And also by your effort you must make it possible. And also you must be worthy of that which you achieve. Certain things come to you naturally in the first place, but they are not necessarily always permanent.
Mm. Can you tell me, how you influence a person, say in a lecture or certain things, when you have a platform you want to give a lecture on?
I think the whole point here is that we can only affect a person according to how much they will allow us to affect them. We cannot force anything. Here, everyone has free will. Of course, the same as in your world, you have free will. You may say that it is not always possible to follow your free will, which in a sense is true enough on Earth, because the circumstances beyond your control and influences of other people. But here, for the first time, your free will comes to play, into play, you know. Here, if you wish to listen to something or something that is being said, then you listen. But you are not forced to accept something until you yourself can accept it. In other words, although we may discuss things here, we may, for instance, like I often go to people in places and to lecture science and so on, scientific things, there are some people who can receive my inspiration, who can receive my thoughts and accept them. Some people who will ask and intelligent questions, and some people who will follow out certain things that I may convey to them. But there are others who perhaps have not received that, how you say, have not reached that stage of development, and they cannot understand and they cannot accept. Everything here is a matter of gradual growth. We cannot expect to convince everyone. Everyone here is not on the same strata. Everyone here is not always receptive even to certain influences and certain thoughts. In other words, it is all evolution, and that is life.
Hmm. Well, if you're interested in the scientific side, and also, of course, the mind especially.
But what I am most interested in, and the main reason why I come to you, is that I am very conscious of the doubts that must arise in the minds of people who are beginning, you might say, to search into this great truth. And although they are anxious for completion, there are many things which they find impossible to accept, things they do not, because they do not invariably understand. And they often, of course, quite wrongly, although in their own estimation quite rightly, expect certain things to be given to them clear and sharp without any distortion. They must remember and realize that you cannot hope to obtain the sort of things that you might call evidence without sometimes some distortion. You may see so far, and you may receive so much, but you must remember that whatever we have to convey to you, we must to some extent bring it down to a level by which you can understand it and which you can accept it. And also, of course, people do not realize that there are many difficulties and complexities, even with people whom you know well, relations and friends whom you love and whom you are anxious to communicate with, for instance. You may expect them to say the most obvious things. But then again, the most obvious things are not necessarily the most evidential or the most convincing. You may think so. You may expect those things and say, if I can receive so-and-so and so-and-so, I will know that is good, that was correct, that is proof to me. But then again, you go away and you say, well, I knew that. It was in my thoughts. That I knew the answer to this or that problem or this or that question or this and that. So, and you say, ah, perhaps the medium read my thoughts. That is why quite often communicators on this side will deliberately give to you certain information which is not registered in your own mind, things which you do not even know. But if you can prove that to be so, what they have told you, that is much better evidence, because it could not be in your thoughts. In other words, we have to guard against this thought transference to some extent in communication, because we have to avoid these things. If we are to bring conviction into your world, we must be able to tell you things of which you have no knowledge and which can be proved afterwards. That's why we often, for instance, go in for, how you say, for prophecy. We don't prophesy just for the sensationalism of prophecy. We do it invariably for a good purpose, to give you conviction that we can see a little further ahead, that we know, which we do know, because we are not in time. If you are in time, we are outside time. We can see a little further. We are rather like the man in the aerial plane, you know. We can see round the corner of the road, but you in the car cannot. It is very important for people to realize that all the things we do are for a purpose. We seldom do anything just for the sake of doing it, for something to say, or just for that moment to please. We do everything, invariably everything, particularly those of us who come with this work in mind and in heart for the advancement of truth. We are concerned with truth, and in consequence we work for that end, to give it and express it to you and prove it to you. We are not concerned with mundane material things, which are so important to so many people. After all, the majority of people, as you well know, who go to the spiritualist and psychic centers, they are more concerned with the personal self. They are more concerned with material things. Well, we may help you with those a little, as far as we may, but we are much more concerned, obviously, with spiritual things, things that are permanent, things that are real, things that are lasting. And when people come to us intelligently and spiritually combined, and work in harmony with us, and realize our difficulties, and cooperate with us, and our patience, nothing is impossible to the power of the Spirit. But the majority of people who are supposed to understand this truth are only concerned fundamentally with self in some shape or form. They are concerned with material things. They expect the Spirit world to be able to answer the most mundane problems, which of course sometimes we do. Sometimes we do it not only because we wish to be of help, but sometimes because we want to give a kind of evidence. But the whole point is that the majority of people who should know better are not concerned with the spiritual facts of this great truth, and the reality, the things that can be of real value to the world. We come into your world to show man how to live and how to express himself spiritually and advance far away from the material conception of things. We have a purpose, and when the spiritualists have a purpose, and nothing is impossible between us. But there are far too many, I'm afraid, who are content with the small things. Mm-hmm. They are not prepared to go further.
There is one question I'd like to ask you, if I may.
You must be quick, madam, because the power...
Oh, you say you can see around the corner. Well, how do you see things recorded? Are they recording on the ethers at work?
Partly. And partly because we can see the outcome of actions, not only of the individual, but other people who affect that individual and what their thoughts in regard to certain situations will be. In other words, we can, we can foresee because of the obvious developments on certain lines.
Thank you.
Anyway, I must go, but I will come and speak to you again. The power is waning, but my blessing to you. Go on with your good work, my friend.
Thank you.
Au revoir.
Thank you for interesting tour.
Papa!
Jeremy, thank you, Mum. That's interesting tour.
Yeah.